Hey, everybody, welcome back. Today we're going to be doing a deep dive into the servant of the Lord.
Oh, yeah.
From the book of Isaiah.
Very cool.
We've got a fascinating lecture here all about, the major prophets. But this one really focuses in on this one figure that just keeps popping up in Isaiah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, nobody's quite sure who this servant is supposed to be.
That's right. And the lecture just jumps right into that question. You know, it's this big puzzle that scholars have been going back and forth on for centuries now.
Yeah.
Is it the nation of Israel as a whole?
Mm.
Is it a specific person? Or could it even be something else entirely?
See, that's what got me interested right away.
Yeah.
Because right off the bat in Isaiah 42, we get this description
of
the servant chosen by God, empowered by the Spirit, this like humble figure bringing justice and light to all the nations.
Right.
And you kind of think, okay, pretty straightforward hero, right?
Yeah. Except the lecture points out that just a few chapters before, Isaiah flat out says the servant is Israel, which when you think about it is kind of a head scratcher.
Yeah.
Because at this point, you know, Israel's in exile, struggling with their own issues. Can a nation in that state really be this ideal servant figure?
It'd be like, I don't know, trying to run a marathon when you've got a sprained ankle and you haven't slept in days.
Yeah.
You might technically be in the race, but are you really fulfilling the role of marathon runner?
Exactly. And the lecture really digs into that tension.
Yeah.
Because Isaiah himself, you know, he doesn't shy away from the fact that Israel has got some problems.
Yeah.
In chapter 42, he gets really honest about their shortcomings, like blindness, captivity, and the root cause. Sin.
So hold on. It's not just that they're like physically stuck in exile.
Right.
It's that there's this deeper spiritual problem happening.
Yeah, that's the main point here. Physical liberation is one thing, but Isaiah seems to be saying there's this need for something much deeper,
This
spiritual redemption. But then, just a few verses later, we get this almost shocking moment of grace. In Isaiah 43.25, God promises to just blot out all of Israel's transgressions.
Wow.
Just for his own sake.
Now that is fascinating to me. Because on one hand, we've got this image of the servant, this ideal figure of justice and light.
Yeah.
But then we're also reminded that even God's chosen people, even the potential servant themselves, they're not perfect.
Right.
So how can God just, you know, wipe the slate clean like that? What does that even mean theologically?
It's a huge question.
Yeah.
And the lecture doesn't unpack it completely.
Yeah.
But I think it points to something really fundamental about God's character.
Okay.
This willingness to forgive, even when it seems impossible, is core to who God is.
And it gets even more interesting because then we go to Isaiah 43.10, where Israel is specifically called God's witness.
Right.
Which, again, makes sense if we're thinking about the global mission of the servant, right?
Yeah.
But there's always a but with Isaiah is in there.
There is. Because the very next section, God expresses this frustration with Israel's continued sin. It's like they've been given this incredible role, this responsibility to show God to the rest of the world.
Right.
But they keep messing up.
I feel like everyone's been there at some point.
Yeah.
That feeling of being called to do something really important. Mm-hmm. But then you struggle to actually live up to it. Like, I want to be this amazing podcast host bringing you these incredible, mind-blowing ideas every episode.
Right.
But some days I'm just running on coffee and hoping I don't trip over my words.
It's very human, that tension between what we want to be and the reality.
Yeah.
And it seems like even ancient Israel could relate to that struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But despite their failures, God doesn't just give up on them.
Mm-hmm.
We see that reassurance in Isaiah 44 where God directly talks to Jacob, my servant.
Okay.
It's like this reminder that their identity as the chosen people is still there, even when they mess up.
And then in verses 3 and 4, there's this beautiful image of God pouring out his spirit on Israel's offspring, creating this huge multitude of descendants.
Yes.
Which, if we kind of zoom out a bit, seems to hint at something beyond just the nation of Israel itself.
Right. The lecture makes a point of saying this could be about including the Gentiles.
Right.
Spreading God's message to those outside of Israel's immediate circle.
Mm.
So even if it starts with Israel, the servant's mission has the potential to go so much further.
Okay. So we've established that Israel is definitely connected to the servant.
Yeah.
But they're not exactly perfect, and their role might be even bigger than we initially thought.
Right.
So where does Isaiah take us from there?
Well, things get really interesting in chapter 44, verse 21. The servant is told to remember the foolishness of idolatry.
Mm.
And I got to say, Isaiah's condemnation of idol worship throughout this whole chapter is pretty scathing.
Yeah.
He does not hold back.
I mean, if you're going to make a point, might as well go all out, right? But why bring up idolatry now? What's the connection to the servant?
The lecture suggests it's all about reminding the servant, whoever they may be, that true power and hope come only from God, not from these fake idols. But there's something deeper here, too.
Okay.
Something that really throws a wrench into our understanding of who this servant is.
Okay. Lay it on me.
It's in Isaiah 48.16. This verse, if you read it closely, it seems like it's being spoken by both God and someone sent by God.
What?
It's almost like this divine duet.
Wow. Okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Two voices, but both somehow connected to the divine. That's a whole new level of mystery.
And the lecture makes a pretty bold claim here. This verse is a hint that the servant might actually be divine themselves.
Divine, like a god. Are we really saying the servant might be God?
Well, not so fast.
Yeah.
It's not quite that simple. The lecture's careful to say, you know, we're dealing with some really deep theological stuff here.
Right.
But that verse in Isaiah 48, it definitely opens up the possibility that the servant's more than just a regular human.
Okay, my mind is officially blown, because if the servant is divine, that changes everything we've been talking about, right?
Exactly.
Their mission, their ability to deal with sin, it all takes on this whole new meaning.
It really does. It's like you're suddenly seeing the world in 3D after only ever seeing it in 2D. You know?
Yeah.
Remember those verses we talked about before where the servant's called to be a light to the Gentiles, bringing salvation to the whole world?
Yeah, that always seemed like a pretty ambitious goal to me, especially for a nation like Israel that was, let's be honest, kind of struggling to get their own stuff together.
Exactly. And that's where the whole divinity thing becomes so important.
Okay.
Because if the servant's just human, how could they possibly do all that?
Right.
They'd be limited by their own weaknesses, their own sinfulness.
Yeah.
But if they're divine, well, that changes everything.
It's like suddenly the impossible becomes possible.
Right.
Because a divine servant wouldn't be held back by those limitations. Yeah. They would have the power to actually make God's will happen on this huge scale.
And it also gives a new perspective on that thing we talked about earlier about God wiping away Israel's transgressions.
Right.
The lecture doesn't make the connection directly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely something to think about.
Yeah.
What if the servant's divine nature is somehow tied to the idea of forgiveness?
So you're saying the servant could be like this intermediary between us and God, offering a way for sin to be overcome, a bridge to reconciliation.
It's an interesting possibility. And it raises even more questions about the relationship between God and this servant figure.
Right.
Are they separate beings? Two sides of the same divine coin? These are the kinds of questions that theologians have been debating for centuries.
See, this is why I love these deep dives.
Me too.
They take a seemingly simple question like, who is the servant of the Lord?
Yeah.
And they take us down these incredible paths of exploration.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about the nature of God, the possibility of forgiveness, the role of suffering. It's mind-blowing.
It really speaks to how rich and complex the text itself is.
Yeah.
You know, Isaiah wasn't just writing some history book or a rule book. He was wrestling with these really profound spiritual truths that still resonate with us today.
But I have to admit, all this talk of divinity and theological debate can feel a bit abstract sometimes.
Sure.
So let's bring it down to earth a bit.
Yeah.
What does this all mean for our listener, you know, for someone who's trying to make sense of their own life and faith?
That's the big question, isn't it? Even though these prophecies were written thousands of years ago, they still speak to us today.
Yeah.
We all face our own struggles with sin, searching for meaning.
So are you saying the servant, this potentially divine figure, offers some kind of answer to those struggles?
It's certainly possible. The lecture highlights the servant's mission of bringing justice, light, and freedom to the world.
Right.
And if we see the servant as representing God's ultimate plan for humanity,
okay,
then their story becomes a source of hope for us too.
It's like this promise that no matter how messed up things seem, God is still working in the background trying to make a better future.
Right.
And that hope is grounded in something bigger than ourselves, something that goes beyond our own limitations.
Exactly. But it also makes us think about our own role in all of this.
Mm.
Are we just sitting back watching God fix everything? Or do we have a part to play in this unfolding story?
Now, that's interesting, because if the servant's working to bring justice and redemption, maybe we're supposed to do the same, you know, in our own way, in our own corner of the world.
What a powerful thought, and one that the lecture hints at, but doesn't fully explore.
Right.
But it's worth thinking about, what does it mean to be a servant in today's world?
Yeah.
How can we bring those qualities of justice, compassion, and hope into our own lives.
So we've got this mysterious servant figure who could be both Israel and divine on a mission to bring justice and salvation to the whole world.
Mm.
And their story offers us this glimmer of hope for all of us who are struggling with sin and searching for meaning. But there's one thing I'm still wrestling with. If the servant is divine, how does that change how we see God? Does it change everything?
That's a deep question.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have questions to wrestle with these ideas. You know, the concept of God is huge and complicated, and we're always going to be learning and growing in our understanding.
I guess so. It's not about having all the answers right.
Right.
It's about being open to the journey to keep exploring these big questions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And these deep dives are a great way to do just that. They give us new ways of looking at things. They challenge what we think we know. And they inspire us to keep searching for the truth.
And speaking of truth, we've been using this word divine a lot.
Yeah.
But I realized we haven't really defined what it means. Are we saying the servant is God?
Hmm.
A separate God? Something else entirely?
That's a really important point. Hmm. And it brings us to something that the lecture touches on briefly, but that has big implications for how we understand the servant, the Trinity.
Wait, the Trinity? You mean the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit? How does that fit into all of this?
Well, the lecture doesn't specifically connect the servant to the Trinity.
Okay.
But it's a connection that many theologians have made.
Right.
Think about it. This idea of a divine servant who's both separate from and connected to God the Father.
Hmm.
It lines up with the Christian idea of Jesus Christ, the Son of God.
Right.
Who's both fully divine and fully human.
Okay, now my mind is officially blown. So you're saying that Isaiah, writing centuries before Jesus was born, was already hinting at the Trinity and the idea of a divine savior?
It's a bold claim,
mm-hmm.
and one that needs to be looked at carefully theologically.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's certainly a possibility. Isaiah's prophecies are often seen as foreshadowing of the coming of Christ.
Right.
And this whole servant idea could be part of that.
This is why I love these deep dives.
Absolutely.
They take what seems like a familiar idea and just flip it on its head,
yeah.
showing us layers of meaning I never would have thought of before.
That's the power of really engaging with scripture and theological ideas.
Yeah.
It's all about discovery
mm-hmm.
and constantly deepening our understanding.
So where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm.
We've got this idea of a divine servant potentially linked to the Trinity foreshadowing Jesus.
Yeah.
What does that mean for how we understand God's plan for the world?
That's the question we'll explore in our final segment.
You can't wait.
Stay with us as we unpack the meaning of this mysterious and powerful concept.
Okay, so we're saying this servant in Isaiah could be like a pre-echo of the Trinity, maybe even pointing towards Jesus. That's a lot to process.
It is. And the lecture doesn't give us all the answers.
Yeah.
But it does bring up something else that adds another layer to this whole servant mystery. Suffering.
You mean like how the servant goes through all this hardship? I guess that's not really something we usually think about with divinity.
Right. We usually think of divine beings as all powerful.
Yeah.
You know, invincible.
Yeah.
But the lecture points out how Isaiah really emphasizes the servant's suffering.
Mm.
It's not just a side note. It's like a key part of their mission.
But why? What's the point of a divine figure going through all that pain? It seems kind of strange, doesn't it?
Well, remember how the servant is supposed to bring justice and redemption to the world? The lecture suggests that this suffering is not just random.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has a role in that mission. It's like the suffering itself makes the redemption possible.
Are you saying the servant's suffering is like a sacrifice? That by going through all of that, they make forgiveness and reconciliation possible for everyone else.
That's a powerful idea.
Mm.
It kind of changes how we think about suffering in general.
Yeah.
If even a divine being experiences pain, maybe it's not something we should always try to avoid.
Mm.
Maybe it has a deeper meaning, a purpose we don't always see.
That makes me think about how we often try to run away from suffering or pretend it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
What if instead of trying to escape it, we tried to learn from it?
Yeah.
Find meaning in those tough moments and let them change us.
That's a really nice thought. And yeah. It ties back to the servant's mission of bringing light into the world. Even in the darkest times, there's always hope, always a chance to grow and transform. It's like even in those moments of suffering, the servant's light is still there, offering a way forward.
Man, this conversation has gone in so many different directions. We started with this simple question about who the servant is, and now we're talking about the Trinity. The meaning of suffering, the possibility of redemption. It's incredible how one idea can lead to so many profound insights.
It really is. That's the beauty of these old texts. They challenge us to think differently, to wrestle with these big questions that have been around for centuries.
And even if we don't have all the answers, just thinking about these ideas is transformative.
Exactly.
But before we go, I gotta ask, what does all of this mean for us today? If Isaiah was right, if there really is this divine servant working behind the scenes to bring justice and redemption, how should that change how we live?
That's the question we all have to face, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we believe in this divine plan, if we accept the hope the servant offers, how do we put that into action? How does it affect our choices, our relationships, how we interact with the world?
Are you saying we have a responsibility to kind of team up with the servant? To become people who bring justice and compassion instead of just waiting for God to fix everything?
I think that's a really great way to say it. The lecture doesn't say it directly.
Yeah.
But it's a natural conclusion based on what we've been talking about. If we believe in a God who's actively working to redeem the world, maybe we're called to be part of that work.
Right.
To bring justice and hope into our own communities.
So it's not just about believing in the servant, it's about being like them.
Yeah.
Living out those qualities and becoming servants ourselves in a way.
That's a beautiful and challenging thought. It reminds us that faith isn't just about what we believe, it's about how we live. It's about matching our actions with what we value and trying to make the world better.
Wow, this deep dive has really taken us on a journey. From figuring out who the servant is to thinking about their suffering and then connecting it all to the Trinity. It's been amazing.
It has. And it's only the start. There's always more to explore. More to think about, more to learn. That's what makes these ancient texts so interesting.
Absolutely. So to everyone listening out there, we leave you with this final thought. If this idea of a divine servant speaks to you, if it means something to you, how will you answer that call? How will you live out the hope, the compassion, the call to action that it embodies? Until next time, keep diving deep.